एते श्रुतीते नृपवेद गीते एते श्रुतीते नृपवेद गीते त्वया विपृष्टे च सनातने च त्वया विपृष्टे च सनातने च ये वै पुरा ब्रह्मन आहतुष्टा ये वै पुरा ब्रह्मन आहतुष्टा आराधितो भगवान वासुदेव आराधितो भगवान वासुदेव एते श्रुतीते नृपवेद गृते त्वया विपृष्टे च सनातने च ये वै पुरा ब्रह्मन आहतुष्ट आराधितो भगवान वासुदेव
Vaishnavas.
Ete, all that is described, Shruti, Ve, Te, unto you, Nripa, O Maharaj Parikshit, Veda Gite, according to the version of the Vedas, Tvaya, by your majesty, Abhipriste, being properly inquired. Cha, also. Sanatane, in the matter of eternal truth. Cha, verily. Ye, which. Vai, certainly. Pura, before. Brahmane, unto Lord Brahma. Ah, said. Tushtah, being satisfied. Aradita, being worshipped. Bhagavan, the personality of Godhead. Vasudeva, Lord Krishna. Translation. Your Majesty Maharaj Parikshit, know that all that I have described in reply to your proper inquiry is just according to the version of the Vedas. And it is the eternal truth. That this was described personally by Lord Krishna unto Brahma, with whom the Lord was satisfied upon being properly worshipped. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The two different ways of reaching the spiritual sky and thereby getting emancipation from all material bondage, namely,
either the direct process of reaching the kingdom of God or the gradual process through the other higher planets of the universe are set forth exactly according to the version of the Vedas. The Vedic version in this connection are: those who are free from all material desires, which are diseases of the heart, are able to conquer death and enter the kingdom of God through the Archi planets. These Vedic versions corroborate the version of the Srimad Bhagavatam, and the latter is further confirmed by Shukadeva Goswami, who affirms that the truth was disclosed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Shri Krishna, Vasudeva, to Brahma, the first authority on the Vedas. The disciplic succession holds that the Vedas were uttered by Lord Krishna to Brahma, by Brahma to Narada, and by Narada to Vyasadeva, and then by Vyasadeva to Shukadeva Goswami, and so on. So there is no difference between the versions of all the authorities. The truth is eternal, and as such, there cannot be any new opinion about the truth. That is the way of knowing the knowledge. That is the way of knowing the knowledge contained in the Vedas. It is not a thing to be understood by one's erudite scholarship or by the fashionable interpretation of the mundane scholars. There is nothing to be added and nothing to be subtracted, because the truth is the truth. One has to accept, after all, some authority. The modern scientists are also authorities for the common man for some scientific truths. The common man follows the version of the scientists. This means that the common man follows the authority. The Vedic knowledge is also received in that way. The common man cannot argue about what is beyond the sky or beyond the universe. He must accept the version of the Vedas as they are, understood by the authorized disciplic succession. In the Bhagavad Gita also, the same process of understanding the Gita is stated in the 4th chapter. If one does not follow the authoritative versions of the Acharyas, he will vainly search after the truth mentioned in the Vedas.
Omagyanti mirandasya gyananjana shalakaya chakshurun militam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha shri chaitanya manobishtam stapitam yena bhutale swayam rupa kadamayam dadati swapadantikam vandeham shri guru shri yutaha padakamalam shri gurun vaishnavamscha shri rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Ragunatam Vitamtam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shivishakan Vitamsha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha, Gopika Kanta, Radha Kanta, Namostute, Tapta Kanchana, Gaurangi, Radhe Vrindavaneshwari, Vrishabhanu Shite Devi, Pranamami Hari Priya, Pancha Kalpataru Vyascha, Kripasindo Vyevacha, Patitanam Pavanebhyo, Vaishnavebhyo, Namo Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ramo Hare Ramo 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 Hare Hare
Hare Krishna. I'd like to welcome all of you all to today's Srimad Bhagavatam class. We are in the second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. And in this section, specifically in this particular verse, the glory of the Guru Parampara is mentioned. And the glory of the knowledge coming in a descending form is mentioned. So essentially, whatever knowledge we gain, especially about spiritual truths, has to be knowledge that is gained in a parampara or an authoritative descent. Today, we'll be doing a little discussion, a little analysis on the importance of teachers in our lives, the importance of guru in our lives, and more importantly, the mood in which we absorb the teachings from great teachers. So, knowledge is like water. There might be a lot of water, but if you don't have thirst, what is the point in having so much water, isn't it? That thirst which somebody has cannot be given from an external source. Now, I cannot make you thirsty. Can anyone make you thirsty? No matter how great a teacher is, how great a guru is, how knowledgeable a guru is, the guru cannot make an individual thirsty. The thirst has to be there within us. So, if you are not thirsty for spiritual growth, what is the point in having a guru who has a divine pot of knowledge, isn't it? So, one should prepare oneself for receiving the teachings. Like say, for example, if a child is given a guitar or a beautiful musical instrument, tabla or guitar or anything like that, you know, very expensive musical instrument. What's the point in having an expensive musical instrument in the hand of a child? If you have seen children, what they do with it? They end up breaking it, isn't it? They will throw it here and there, you know. It's not of much use to them. Similarly, knowledge is there, is a very powerful commodity. It's a very powerful commodity. And that knowledge has to be in the right hands. It has to be in the hands of someone who wants it, who deserves it, who is hungry, thirsty for it. In nowadays, there are two types of vehicles or bikes, you know. There's a self-start bike and there's a kick-start bike, isn't it? Kickstarts are those where you kick hard and then it begins. And self-start, you just press a button and it begins, isn't it? Now obviously, which is easier to handle? A self-start. The same thing in spiritual life. We can all decide to be a kickstart or a self-start engine. Most people who come to the path of Krishna consciousness, they are kickstarts. You know. That means somebody has to kick them and then somehow with a lot of effort they start. But imagine if somebody is a self-start. That means that person has come seeking knowledge. Now those people who come seeking knowledge, they are a very rare category of people because they are eager already. So spiritual life is best for those who are having a self-start mode basically. So spiritually, someone who is very eager to visit, to come and learn, such a person can be helped. There was a man who used to go to attend a program. For years he was attending. Then he just stopped. He got bored and stopped attending the program. Now, this was in a Western country. So one devotee, he was thinking, why is this fellow not coming? You know. So he went to his house. And this man, he greeted him very cordially and welcomed him. And this person went in, this preacher, he went in. And obviously, what is the reason he went in? He went in to invite him to come for the program, right? But instead of talking about it, he demonstrated it in a very interesting way. So this was a country where there was, you know, very intense cold. So, you know, many of these places, they have a fireplace. So this guy went and sat next to the fire, in the fireplace. He took a tong and he pulled out one big burning coal from the fire and put it outside. When he pulled it out, it was a burning, intensely burning, red, hot, smoky piece. And he kept it out. In a few minutes, that red, smoky, hot, fiery piece became black, ordinary cold piece of coal. He didn't say anything still. He took back that coal, put it back into the fire, and it started burning again. And this man, he just walked out. This guy understood everything. So, what is that coal? All of us, isn't it? We are all like that piece of coal. As long as we are in fire of association of devotees, we'll be burning. We'll be intense, you know. But the moment you take that coal out and you put it outside without the association of devotees, we become ordinary. We become completely fireless. We become completely with a lack of spiritual hunger and thirst. The only thing that we need to do is simply put it back in. And while this man was going out, this person said, "Thank you very much for your lecture. I'll come from next week." He didn't speak anything. But sometimes you don't have to really speak anything, isn't it? So the guru doesn't have to speak to convince us. His presence is enough. There are many spiritual teachers, there are many spiritual authorities we meet in our lives who don't even have to give a lecture, who don't even have to speak to us. Their very assuring presence is enough. This, you know, get to see them, more than enough. You know, that itself rejuvenates our spiritual desires and spiritual hunger. A teacher is someone who helps us frame the right questions. It doesn't matter if you don't have all the answers. A spiritualist is someone who has the right questions. You know, there was a person who went to a preacher and he asked him, "Why do bad things happen to good people?" And this is a common question, right? Every second person asks you this question. So this preacher looked at him and he said, "The question itself is wrong. And you expect me to answer the question?" So this person was confused. How is the question wrong? Bad things happen, right, to good people. So he said, the question should be, what happens to good people when bad things happen to them? That means, the answer is, they become better people. See, there's a big difference between an ordinary person going through a bad phase, a bad experience, a bad situation in life, and great people going through bad experience in their life. When the Pandavas went through bad experience in their life, they became better. It's not that the bad experience made them worse. The bad experience made them better than what they were. If you look at the Vedic scriptures, every person who has gone through a bad experience, he has become a better version of himself. He has become a much better person. So the question should not be, why do bad things happen to good people? The question should be, what happens when bad things happen to good people? They become better people, basically. So, if you ask this question, why is this happening to me? It sets your intelligence in a direction that will lead to self-pity. In the same scenario, if you ask this question, what can I learn from this? It will lead you to higher maturity. It will help you understand better. Suppose you ask this question, why this person does not understand me? This will lead you to blame others. This will lead you to feel victimized. But instead, if you can ask this question, what should my approach be so that he understands me better? This will help you feel that you are in control of the situation. So basically, asking the right questions is what a good teacher helps you with. And the moment you ask the right questions, you get amazing answers and you get amazing insights into life. There was a very big physicist and a Nobel laureate. His name was Isaac Rabi. And this person, he was very famous for his discovery of nuclear magnetic resonance. And he said, "My mother made me a scientist." So usually, most people, most mothers, you know, if they when a child comes back home, what do the mothers ask the children? You know, did you learn something today? Or what did you learn today? You know? This lady, the mother of this man, Isaac Rabi, she would ask him, did you ask a good question today? So this is the difference between, so this man said, this question that my mother would ask me on a daily basis made me a scientist. Because only when you ask the right questions, you get deep answers, you get relevant answers, you get insightful answers. And most of the times, our questions lead us to feel self-pity. Our questions lead us to blaming somebody else. Our questions lead us to feel out of control. But if you ask the right questions help us to feel in control of situations. It helps us get answers that will help us get deeper insights into our lives. And therefore, asking the right questions is so important. There is a very beautiful section in the Ramayana where Lord Ram, Lakshman and Vishwamitra Muni are walking. They are going through the forest towards Siddhashram. At a particular point, they reach a river named Sona River. And as they were crossing the river, Lord Ram noticed that in some places the river was shallow. And in some places the river was very deep. So now Ram, obviously now because the river was shallow in some places and deep in some places, he was not sure whether we should use a boat or not use a boat to cross the river. So he asked Vishwamitra Muni, what should we do? And Vishwamitra Muni gave a fantastic answer. He gave a very deep and insightful answer. He said, when you are in situations in life where you don't know what to do, follow the path set by great people in the past. The Bhagavatam says, Mahajana Gena Kata Sapanta, right? So this is, so Vishwamitra Muni is telling that many, many great sages in the past have crossed the river using this path. And he pointed out a particular path in which Ram should cross the river. And Ram, you know, used that path and he actually managed to cross the river. So this is Vishwamitra Muni spontaneously replied to Ram's question. But this is a very profound reply. Because any spiritual aspirant does not need to invent a new way to progress in spiritual life. You don't need to invent a new way to perfect your life. You just follow the same path that has been set by the authorities. So some paths may be easy, but actually when you go a little further, there might be a quicksand over there, you know. So you might just start walking on that path thinking that I'm inventing a new path and eventually end up in a quicksand. So a lot of people enthusiastically practice spiritual life on their own without the right guidance. And initially it might seem that they're actually going to cross, but at some point they enter into quicksands. So furthermore, some paths might be tough initially, but actually they might be safe and secure because these paths have already been trodden on by great authorities. And they have left clues how to cross this very difficult and very tough path. And therefore, before you cross, before you go ahead, you must consult some authorities. I often go on trekking. In my initial days of doing trekking, I would just go and explore on my own only, without taking anyone with me. We'll figure it out, you know. And there have been times where, while trying to figure out, instead of getting down in that particular village, I got down in another village only, you know. And interestingly, that village is kilometers away from the place where I really wanted to be. Because in the forest, what you'll know? You won't know anything, isn't it? After that, I started taking guides. It seems to be, you know, why to follow somebody, why to follow a guide and all that. But it saves so much time in the end, so much of stress. So in spiritual life also, we need someone who is just there to guide us. Just don't take this path, just take this left turn and you'll reach a destination. And that's what the role of authorities is. The role of authorities is that they just give you that little bit of clue, and that clue helps us reach our destination nicely. There was a very powerful person whose name was Mayasur. So Mayasur was one of the Danavas. The Danavas are architects, and they are extremely powerful architects. They are like, you know, the creativity is at another level, basically. So this Mayasur, he wanted to become a master architect. He wanted to excel all levels of architecture, basically. So he prayed to Lord Brahma, and he got boons from Lord Brahma. Brahma blessed him that he'll become one of the greatest architect among the Devas and Asuras. And this man, he began to build fantastic, palaces and mansions, etc. And every single palace he created, it was something unique. On one particular day, so now he was really good at architecture, but he wanted to become the best. One day, he came across a secret that actually made him the best of the best architects. And the secret was with his guru, Shukracharya. So one day he overheard his guru, Shukracharya, speaking to someone. And Shukracharya was saying that knowledge is like wealth. And just like wealth has to be carefully guarded, knowledge also has to be carefully guarded. Like this, Shukracharya was telling someone. And from this one statement, this Mayasur, he interpreted it in his own way. And he found another completely different interpretation of this statement. So now he decided to do something very, very different. He prayed to Lord Brahma a lot. He spent a lot of time meditating on Lord Brahma. And this time finally Brahma appeared in front of him. And this man, he asked for the ability to take knowledge from somebody else, somebody else's mind, somebody else's brain. It's like, you have a pen drive, you put it in somebody's laptop, you can get all the data, right? This guy found a way to get data from somebody's brain, and Brahma gave him that blessing. You know what this guy did? This guy went to his own guru, Shukracharya, and stole away the knowledge of architecture from his own guru's brain. Imagine, So, and then of course, this man became the most powerful architect in the universe. And he excelled even Vishwakarma in his architectural abilities. So now, eventually what happened was, Mayasur was becoming better and better and better than everyone else. At some point in time, Indra, he came to the house of Mayasur. And he started appreciating Mayasur for all his architectural abilities and all that. And suddenly, Indra got very angry at Mayasur. And Indra killed him. Mayasur was dead. Now, this is a very interesting story in the scriptures. And the reason the story is being told is very simple. When you get something that you deserve, it remains with you. When you get something that you don't deserve, it leaves you at the time that you need it the most. The same thing with the story of Karna. When he got knowledge from Parashuram, he appeared to have gained so much knowledge of all the mystical weapons and all that. But when he needed it the most, he lost it. When he needed it the most, the day when he really needed it, that day he lost it. On the other hand, you'll find the story of Lord Krishna and Sudama in the forest when they were going to serve their guru with the logs of wood. And when the guru saw Sudama and Krishna the next day, they were completely wet and drenched, but still they did not give up each other's association and they did not give up their mission of carrying the logs of wood. The guru blessed the two of them. And of the many blessings they gave, the Sandipani Muni gave Krishna, one of the blessings he gave was, whatever knowledge you gain, you will always remember it, especially when you need it the most. Now look at the difference. These are two disciples who gained knowledge from their guru, but in a bad way, in a wrong way. And here is two disciples who gained knowledge from their guru in the right way. And the result was, the guru blesses them that when you need it the most, your knowledge will remain with you. Tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam dadami buddhi yogam tam yenamam upayantite. Krishna says in the Gita that when you worship the Lord and the spiritual master, priti purvakam means in love and devotion. See, knowledge is not a commodity that can be gained just like that. For a lot of people, knowledge is equal to information. But for a spiritualist, knowledge leads to realization. And that realization leads to transformation. So there is no point in having heaps and heaps of knowledge with you. There is no point in having the entire database in your mind. If you have all the knowledge of all the scriptures in your mind, do not think that you will be able to apply that knowledge just like that. That application of the knowledge comes with the blessings of the spiritual master, blessings of the guru. And the blessings of the guru will come when you are approaching knowledge and approaching the spiritual master with the right understanding. So therefore, we always hear of this Cheto Darpana Marjanam, right? So we always hear of the idea of cleaning our hearts. So whenever we speak about cleaning the heart, in the same context always, there is a discussion of the dust of the lotus feet of the spiritual master. Now, you look at Tulsidas's Hanuman Chalisa also, Nija Manu Bukuru Sudhari, he speaks about how does it start? He speaks about how it is Shri Guru Saroja Racha Nijamana Mukura Sudhari. So he talks about how the word Guru is always associated with the dust of the lotus feet of the Guru. Always, you will always find, whenever there is Guru mentioned, you will always find somewhere there is a discussion on the dust of the lotus feet of the Guru. And there is a very interesting reason why. See, there are two roles of Guru in our lives. One of the roles of the Guru in our lives is to give us drishti. What is the meaning of drishti? Drishti means vision. So, our hearts are filled with dirt. Now, if you have a mirror that is filled with dirt, how do you wipe the mirror? You wipe it with a cloth, isn't it? But have you ever tried wiping a mirror with a dirty cloth? If you wipe the mirror with a dirty cloth, what happens? It gets more dirtier, isn't it? But how can the dust of the feet of the Guru clean a dirty mirror? Apparently it seems to be dust. Dust is also dirty. The mirror also is dirty. But the interesting thing about this dust of the lotus feet of the Guru is that it doesn't clean the mirror. You know what it cleans? It cleans your eyes. It cleans your eyes. Because the dirt is not in the mirror, the dirt is in your eyes. In the way you see things. The way you see the world. So the role of the spiritual master is to give you drishti. The word drishti means vision. So we do not have to change the world. We do not have to change situations in our life. We do not have to change people around us. We do not have to change anything around us. We only have to change the way we look at it. We only have to change the perspective that we have towards looking at everything in our lives. Drishti is the biggest blessing a spiritual master can give us. If you come to a spiritual master, a genuine bona fide spiritual master, and you have not gained a new vision, if you have not gained drishti, if you have not gained an insight, you have not gained anything. Every time you come to the temple, every time you come to a satsang, you have to gain a drishti. You have to gain a new way of looking at life. You have to gain a new way of understanding yourself and God. That's what is the word drishti really means. So, when we come to the spiritual master, The spiritual master gives us that drishti. That's why the scriptures put so much weight on the spiritual master. And that's why the scriptures recommend us to go to the spiritual master. Therefore, whenever the word spiritual master is used or guru is used, it is always, we speak about Shri Guru. What is the meaning of Shri Guru? Shri Guru, there can be many ways of interpreting the word. The word Shri means Lakshmi Devi or the goddess of fortune, Sita, Radha. And when we say Shri Guru, it means Guru who has the blessings of Shri, of goddess, of Lakshmi Devi, Radharani, of Sita Devi. That means the Guru who is teaching us, whatever the Guru teaches us, is because he is already blessed by the divine goddess, by the Ladini potency of the Lord. And therefore he is Shri Guru. And another way of looking at the word Shri Guru is because Shri, Lakshmi Devi, is also one of the one of the authorities in parampara, right? So Shri Guru also means someone who has come in that parampara of Lakshmi. Someone who has come in the parampara, in an authoritative disciplic succession. And therefore, whatever that person speaks gives us drishti, gives us a new vision. And therefore, whenever we come to a spiritual master, whenever we come to the to a great soul, great devotee, we have to expect and we have to experience drishti. And also another very interesting connotation that is used for a spiritual master is always lotus feet, right? Whenever we speak about spiritual master, there is always a mention of the lotus feet of the spiritual master. Why is lotus feet always mentioned? Why is the word lotus always used? Because lotus, it grows in a muddy water. It grows in dirty water. But it is uncontaminated by the dirty water. Similarly, the spiritual master may be a part of the material world, but he is uncontaminated by the material world. He is completely in a different realm, basically. So, which means the spiritual master may live in a very muddy environment, but he is unaffected by that muddy environment. Therefore, when we go to the spiritual master and take shelter of his lotus feet, we will learn the art of being in this world, but not being affected by this world. Why we go to the spiritual master? Because he is someone who is already living life like that. He's living in this material world, but he's unaffected by the material world. So when we go to the spiritual master, the spiritual master helps us attain that kind of vision. And the second thing the spiritual master gives us or helps us with is darpan or a mirror. When we go to the spiritual master, he cleans our eyes, but he also shows us a mirror. And what does the mirror do? The mirror shows us our own faults. The mirror shows us our lacking, our shortcomings. The problem with most people is that when we look in the mirror, we only see good in ourselves. Hardly anyone who looks in the mirror and looks at defects in himself or herself. You know? Most of the time when we look in the mirror, we see a beautiful or a handsome person looking back. Seldom does the mirror show you an ugly face. That's the illusion of the mirror, right? It's a very illusory object. But when the spiritual master wipes your eyes first, gives you the right drishti, and then you look in the mirror, you will see all your defects. You will see all your shortcomings. You will see all your flaws. The saddest thing that can happen to a spiritualist is when a spiritualist thinks, I do not have any flaws. That's the saddest thing that can happen to a spiritualist. When a spiritualist thinks, I am perfect. I know everything. I do not need someone who can show me my flaws. And to such a person who doesn't feel that, you know, he or she has any flaws, no one can help. No one can help, literally. And therefore, when we approach the spiritual master gives us, cleans our eyes, gives us drishti, and with that drishti, when you look into the mirror, you see flaws in yourself. There was a man who wanted to see God. So he went to one saint. And he asked the saint, you know, how do I find God? How do I see God? Can you please help me? The saint told him, just close your eyes. God is in your heart. You will see God within. So this man sat down, closed his eyes and intensely started meditating inside, within himself. And then he saw some really ugly, dangerous looking demons. And he got scared. He ran from there. He went to another saint. He said, the saint told me to see inside. And I saw some demons inside, some really ugly creatures. He said, can you please help me see God? So the second saint told him, go in the association of devotees. In the association of devotees, you will see God. He is definitely there. Wherever association of devotees are there he is there. So this man went in the association of devotees and he started looking around where if he can find God anywhere. So he looked around, you know, all over, and he said, you know, I couldn't find God anywhere. I looked all over the association of devotees, I couldn't find God anywhere. So he went to a third saint and he said, you know, I saw inside, I couldn't see God. I saw outside, I couldn't see God. Can you please tell me where to find God? This third saint told him, you actually need an optician to help you. God is inside also, God is outside also. But your problem is that your eyes are not proper. You need an optician, and if you get the right specs, you'll be able to see God. And this person explained how the role of a guru in our lives is like an optician. He gives us the right drishti. And the moment you wear the right specs, the moment your eyes get cleansed, and then you see, you'll realize that within our heart, God is there. But He's hiding behind all our anarthas. All the demons that are there in our heart, He's hiding behind them. So when we look into our heart, we actually see all these anarthas, and it's scary. And we stop there. But actually, beyond those anarthas is God, is the presence of the Lord inside. And the Lord is there in satsang also. But unfortunately, why we don't see God in satsang? Because we're so busy judging people. We're so busy judging all the devotees around us. We're so busy looking at devotees from an external perspective that where do we can't find, you know, God in the satsang also. And therefore, when we come to the association of devotees, when we come to the association of the guru, and help, the guru helps us with these two things, drishti and darpan. That means get the right vision and, you know, hold a mirror to see our flaws. And then we can actually see things. The first advantage of Guru Kripa is that in spite of having intelligence, we do not see events in the right way. But when we take shelter of the Guru, we get the vision to see events in the right way. Again, I'm just saying, the events don't change. The events in our life won't change. But the vision to see those events will change. Like for example, in the you know, when you look at Bhagavad Gita, Krishna and Arjun Samvad, the discussion between Krishna and Arjun. So Krishna and Arjun had a relationship at many levels. But at a particular point, Arjun said, I am your disciple. Shishya steham shadimam tvam prapannam. He said, I am your disciple, I am a disciple surrendered to you. And the moment he said, I am a disciple surrendered to you, he said, show me the way. And then Krishna begins to laugh at all the logic of Arjun. Because Arjun, at this point in time, in the beginning of the Gita, he seems to be too much concerned about the creation than about the creator. He's too concerned about the world. And he's not concerned about what God will think. What is God's desire, basically. Krishna laughs at Arjun because he is carrying so much burden on his shoulders, and it's not a burden he's supposed to carry at all. So many of us, we carry such heavy burdens on our shoulders without understanding that it is not our capacity to carry those burdens. It's God's role to carry those burdens for us. At the end of the Gita, Krishna showed in the universal form. And when Krishna showed in the universal form, he did something very interesting. Along with showing the universal form, he told Arjun, you do not have the capacity to see this form. I have to give you a special vision. And when I give you the special vision, Then you can see the universal form. This is what a guru does to a disciple. The guru, the universal form is always there. But the universal forms, the ability to see the universal form is not there. The moment Krishna gave Arjun the blessing, God has to give the living entity a vision. So now, so Krishna is telling Arjun, till now, you have been seeing life, you have been seeing the events, you have been seeing everything with your eyes. Now look at the world with my eyes. Saying that, he gave him the divine vision. So now, if you see the world, you see incompleteness. And you feel anxious, right? Imagine, today, I'm sure all of us in this room are having some problem or the other, right? We're all having our own problems. Somebody might have a financial problem, somebody might have a health problem. So many problems we all have. When we look at our problems, most of the time we are looking at our problems using our own eyes. Imagine one day, Krishna grants you divine vision to look at your problems with his eyes. How will you look at the problem? Your perception of the problem only will change, isn't it? So when Arjun got the divine eyes of Krishna and he looked at the universal form, he realized Duryodhana is entering in the mouth of Krishna and Krishna is biting him.
Yeah.
Such a big problem, Krishna already solved it. Krishna already dealt with it. And Bhishma, Drona, all of them entering into his mouth, one by one. And Krishna is finishing them off. All the problems that are so big and so complicated is nothing for God. So similarly, when we look at life from our own vision, so the message that he is giving Arjuna is that, earlier you fought thinking that you are the doer, thinking that I have to do so many things. But the moment you get the divine vision and you see everyone is dead, you will know that you don't have to fight as a doer because somebody else has already done the action. You only have to fight as a nimitta, as an instrument in the hand of God. Now, after gaining this vision, when Arjun fought the war, he fought in a totally different perspective because he had seen the future already. He had seen something else only. And with that faith, he fought the war. So similarly, this is not just the truth that the Mahabharata is trying to tell us or the Gita is trying to tell us in a symbolic way. It's a truth that all of us have to realize in our own way. So whoever fights the war of life first needs the right drishti from the guru. And that drishti from the guru destroys the pride that you are the doer. And then you act. Then you do things. You will do it in a totally different light. When we offer obeisance to the spiritual master, we say, Namo Vishnu Padaya. What is the meaning of the word Namaha? Na-ma. It means it is not about me. When we say, all glories to the spiritual master, you know, all glories to the devotees. You know, what does it mean? That means it's not about me. See, this world, the way this world is created, or rather, the way everyone in this world behaves, as if everything is about them only. Look at anybody's Instagram accounts. It's all about them, isn't it? It's all about their knowledge. It's all about their greatness. It's all about their beauty. It's all about their, you know, amazingness. But actually, the world is not about us at all. The world is all about God. The world is all about something, some divine force, isn't it? The day we recognize it, that the world is not about us, Namaha. The day we realize the world is not about us, we realize our problems are also not about us. Our life situations also are not about us. Our perspectives of looking at life is also not just centered around us. But it is centered around something much, much higher. And Guru Kripa, the power of the spiritual master, is that the spiritual master gives us that vision. And he gives us a vision to see events from a different perspective. The perspective, that means see others from a different perspective. See life situations from a different perspective. See your problems from a different perspective. And then, at some point, when you start having the divine vision and you start having the mirror, you start realizing that the problem, the world is not the problem. Others are not the problem. Life situation is not a problem. I am the problem. The problem is that I am not able to look at life in the right perspective. I am not able to deal with life's problems in the right perspective. I am not able to understand people in the right perspective. If we simply understand these two things, the vision the spiritual master is trying to give us and the mirror that the spiritual master is trying to show us, at some point in our lives, we would have dealt with everything in our lives. People won't disturb us. People's bad behavior won't disturb us. Life's bad situations won't disturb us. Life's calamities and problems won't disturb us. All our personal problems, inconveniences, our difficulties won't disturb us, because we're looking at the world with a different vision and we're looking at ourselves with a different vision. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.